Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Just a piece of house cleaning here. I did, in fact, spell bloviating right.
Good for you, bud.
The auto ding was working.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't very confident, though, when I asked him.
Hey.
He had to double check, but you can't give the early ding call.
No,
if you know what I'm saying, you can't do that.
He trust me,
way too much. He should know better.
That is true.
He should know way better than that.
That is true. Is this the year that we find out what truly has been behind the Broncos' regression in each of the last 2 years? Nick Ferguson filled in again this morning for Stink on the morning show. And the guys were discussing if the Broncos can have a Nuggets-like season this year. And it led to Evans stating that this could be the year we find out what truly has been the issue here for the Broncos.
So now you have to tell me that the Broncos have what it takes to have a Nugget-type season. From coaching to overall talent to that singular talent, Jokic-type singular talent that you had with them that you'll have with this group.
Why not? Why not?
Okay.
No one expected the Nuggets to do what they did.
Well, they've been building.
That's right.
They have not gone through the equivalent of 16 and 28 the last couple of years. This has been a team that has been steadily climbing. The Broncos have been regressing.
Well, you just talked about that word, building. And I believe that they've done that with Fangio, Munchak, Scangarello, Dalton Reisner.
All right. Your first three people you mentioned were coaches. Okay. We're right back to where we started. This is what this year is all about. This is the litmus test. This is it. We will determine once and for all if it's coaching or if it's been talent.
Evans has done a nice job, in my opinion, in the morning, going through sort of the process of elimination in terms of blame. You know, like if you lay another egg this year, you can't just lay it at the feet of Bill Musgrave. It's not Mike McCoy's fault. It's not right. It's not Vance Joseph's fault. It's not Brock Olivo's fault. You're going to be able to highlight the lack of talent and the drain
here.
Miss Brock Olivo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
How can you not miss Brock Olivo? If you ever heard Brock Olivo speak, well, I'll say this. We got a terrific replacement in Tom McMahon.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
But
I do miss Brock.
Do we have some, Steven? Do we have any Tom McMahon? We don't have any Olivo anymore. But we have Tom McMahon. Give me some Tom McMahon, please.
Zach's juice is rare. I've learned a ton from Zach, so we're lucky to have him.
Do we have any good quality sound?
Yeah, that's what I coach. It's just there on the rectangle. I don't even know how to really use the phone very well, so.
There you go. That's our special teams coach.
Was he hypotenuse guy or was that Brock?
Yes.
They're running the hypotenuse. We're all screwed.
There we go.
Oh, God, I can't wait for pressers. I can't wait for special teams pressers. No, but Mike's done a nice job of process of elimination that, look, this is John. This is John. If you don't figure it out this season, and it goes the other way, too, that if you do figure it out, John's going to get the credit. And it's like the heavy, you know, is the head that wears the crown. It's going to go one or two ways. But the people to blame, like the lineup
right. At
the police station, like that guy did it. Those people are dropping like flies, but there's one guy still standing.
Sure. Look, I mean, I don't think this thing is going to go from 5-11, 6-10 to all of a sudden 10-6. I mean, I just want to see a progression here. That's what I want to see. I don't think you're going to get a situation where you take this huge jump because of these changes. I mean, you might see, you know, Mike Evans and Nick were talking, and Mike kept on bringing, you know, they're talking about the Nuggets. It was a steady progression. They didn't all of a sudden go from, you know, a bad basketball team to number two seed. I mean, they slowly got better and better and better, and they were right there in the playoffs and, you know, for the last couple of years, and then they took the big step this year, right? But what did they have? What did they have, Zach, that I keep saying in football you need, and it's usually overlooked?
What do – say it again. I wasn't listening.
Oh, my gosh.
So the Geico music?
What do they have? What do the Nuggets have that the Broncos haven't had? What have the Nuggets had?
Oh, continuity.
Yes.
Sure.
Right? They have continuity. You know, Mike Malone, I mean, some people wanted to get rid of Mike Malone after, you know, 2 years ago, whatever. And it's like, no, they kept him. It's like they have continuity, consistency there with the coaches. Broncos haven't had that. Okay, so to all of a sudden think that they're going to go from this bad football team to take this huge jump because of these coaches in 1 year, I think that's a little bit unrealistic in this situation. Now, they should be a better football team, but I think that's we're starting the building process here. We're starting, you know, to move in the right direction. And for me, that's all I want to see is this train moving in the right direction, like where I can just really say, okay, that draft class in 18, man, they are still on the move up. That 2019 draft class, wow, they did a great job there. We got some nice pieces. Joe Flacco, you know, those Mike Munchak, what a great job he's doing. This new offense with Scangarello. That's what I want to see, and that's what I want to feel moving forward, that this thing is heading in the right direction, that we have all the right pieces here to hopefully in a few years be a true contender.
So you're not worried how fast the train is going?
Trains, I don't think that, and I think
you're not worried about the kids in the back seat saying, are we there yet? Are
right.
we there yet? Are
Quiet.
We there yet?
Get on your iPad. You know, watch the movie. You didn't download. I told you to download the movie. Why didn't you download the movie? We don't have Wi-Fi in the car. Oh, sorry. I do that with my kids. Like, you know.
Do you think Peyton ever turns around, like, in the G6? He's like, I will turn this plane around.
You lost my train of thought there.
Real quick, by the way, we're going to check in with the great Sandy Clough here at 2:15 because I want to pick his brain about what he's seen from the Colorado Rockies here in the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks in particular, that has got them fully back in the wild card picture. On the RamosLaw.com text line, someone says, Lampert looks great so far, so let's hope he's not another Kyle Freeland. And, Zach, you should be ashamed of taking Stokely's money. Stoke won the bet. It's not Lambert's fault he was pulled in the fifth. The main point was Stokely
right.
felt that he'd be great, and you didn't.
That's
you
right.
lose, and Stoke wins.
That's right.
The innings aren't up to the pitcher. That's from Jim.
Jim, you're spot on, Jim. Look, and it was a fine print, and I didn't want to argue it, so I just paid it up. I just paid the coffee.
How could you argue? You're going to lose money in court, too, on top of losing?
And pay the lawyer fees. No, I didn't want to go and pay your lawyer fees. Just take it.
Settle out of court.
Just pay the coffee and be done with it. It's a double star day anyway at Starbucks, so I got double stars today.
Is that right?
I felt good about it.
Wow.
Felt good. Delivered, and
no, I'm
done
I'm,
with
I'm,
it.
I'm glad you were right. I was wrong. I thought Lampert was going to struggle against the Cubs in that lineup for the second time in 5 days. And he didn't. He was great, and we really could be on to something. What does the great Sandy Clough think about the trajectory of these Rockies moving forward? We'll dive into it next. Sandy Clough dropping by the studio. We're trading stories about how we were hitting houses with golf balls at the Ridge this
week. Well, I didn't
week.
Hit them far enough to hit any houses at the Ridge, but
I'm always in the houses over there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I felt bad. I'm like, your houses must be getting peppered on a fairly regular basis here.
Right, this is the 16th. Right, the 16th, I know for sure, and I'm probably forgetting one or two other ones.
Yeah. Sandy,
the houses are definitely in play.
Yes.
Sandy Clough
like
dropping by Stokely.
Nolan is not happy right now, by the way. He must have just got hit with the ball, and he is barking at the Cubs bench.
Yes, he is.
Barking at the bench.
And Madden's shaking his head.
Yep.
Now, that's good.
I like
it. A little bit of friction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Too bad maybe that'll wake him up. Right. But maybe that'll wake him up,
they're
right,
down
Sandy?
Four runs the other night at exactly this point
that's
of the
right.
game.
That's
came
right.
back to win.
And they came back to
ooh,
win. Oh, yeah.
Got him right on that left
yep.
elbow.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So maybe the second ooh. Time in a week here we could have some tension after what we saw on Saturday night against the New York Mets.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah. Nolan. Yep. We're watching the replay here. He is barking. And we saw him throw his hands.
Twice. I couldn't tell exactly what he said there.
Nolan, if you remember last year, had to stand on his head for 5 games and time
right.
out for throwing
against
hands.
The Giants.
Was it the Giants?
It was
Padres?
The Giants.
Or was it Giants? Okay. Because I remember him, like, there's like baseball shoving matches, and then there's like actually throwing hands a little bit.
And the guy with the pitcher kept backpedaling, I think. Nolan was chasing
him. And he did caught him once. Nolan caught him once with a closed fist.
And they're still looking at his arm.
Golly, you hate to see it. And they're having the trainer out there. And
it looks like he's okay, but
I think like he's okay. It's just a little pain. But.
All right.
You just don't. I wonder, and this is what, you know, when you hit the star. What usually happens?
Payback.
So we'll follow this game closely. But
the score is right.
It is
at the moment for retaliation.
That's right. And if it gets any worse than 5-0, you'll see one of the Rockies go after. I don't know if Chris Bryant's not playing, but you know one of their guys. And you see there earlier in the game, Sensatella buzzed the tower of one of their players. Wow.
Okay. Well, we could have a little bit of a little heat here. A little heat. I'm rooting for it.
Yep,
I'm here.
Give me something. Hopefully, in the next 40 minutes,
I'm here for it. If it goes into a brawl, I will break into play-by-play. So fear not.
I'll beat you to it. Trust me.
Sandy, dropping by Stokely and Zach. The Rockies today are, believe it or not, this is a team who at one point was the worst team in the sport. 3-12.
3-12
was the worst home team in the sport. You snap your fingers. A month later or so, the Rockies today, and that doesn't look promising because they're down 5-0 in the bottom of the third, but today are going for a franchise record, 11th consecutive home win of 10 of them already in their back pocket. On the whole, they've been pretty fun to watch here recently.
Yeah, they have been. They're really swinging the bats well, and that's what I remember about the last 11-game home winning streak in 1996. They won 55 games at home that year.
Mm.
Unfortunately, they lost 53 on the road. So they finished 83-79, but they won 55, and that was the first full home schedule at Coors Field, 1996, because 95, it was 144 games, and they didn't play a full 81-game home schedule, and 95 was the first year at Coors. So the first full year at Coors, they won 55 games at home. I don't know that this team can get to 55, but they have played extremely well at home, especially on offense. And it's given them a little cover for a starting rotation that still is a little bit shaky. And, you know, you don't have a Freeland this year who's giving you really good outings every time out. You get two in a row, but then you get a bad one. Sensatella had a good last outing, pretty good last outing. And you know, they've raked them over the coals today.
Well, Sandy, I wanted to ask you about, you know, what do you make of the Kyle Freeland situation? You know, fourth in the Cy Young last year, now, you know, in the minors, and we're not even halfway through the season. Obviously, that's very disappointing. So what do you make of Kyle Freeland's situation? And what do you make of Peter Lambert and his first two ever starts with the Rockies?
Well, Peter Lambert reminds me a little bit of Jimenez when he came up in 2007. And Franklin Morales did, too, and actually he pitched pretty well, left-hander. But that was the first glimpse, really extended glimpse we had of Ubaldo. And they, of course, make the Rocktober run, get all the way to the World Series. But those two guys won seven games between them in the final 2 months. And I'm thinking if Freeland, as Patrick Saunders tells us, probably needs another month and a half of work in the minors before he's right again, Lambert's going to have to win 10, 12 games for these guys to stay in the race because they really don't have sorry, Jeff Hoffman, it's not happening. And you've watched Jeff Hoffman for longer than I have, Zach, and I just don't know. So you've got three guys now, and Sensatella's the third, but I think Lambert may end up being their second or third best starter. And I know you were wondering about his prospects last night. We got a text last week from a fellow who sounded like a scout and was drawing on some experience saying the next outing he'll get ridden out of there inside of 5 minutes.
So I wasn't talking crazy my rationale.
No, we got text to that effect. And I don't know, you could be right, I guess. I mean, they see him again in a more favorable hitting environment. I guess it could go wrong. But and he wasn't quite as sparkling last night as he had been the first time out.
Right. Yeah.
But he was plenty good enough. And I like the assortment of pitches he has, and he seems to have great confidence in all of them. I'm wondering why his minor league numbers were so mediocre or in some cases downright poor, but maybe like Jimenez, who was not doing that well at AAA when they called him up in 2007, maybe he's just ready to pitch on this level. And Iannetta is a very underrated handler of pitchers, and he's had Iannetta guiding him through his first two starts. Remember, Iannetta was good for Freeland last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And Iannetta is hitting, right around 300, slugging. So I'm wondering if Iannetta doesn't gradually take over here and play more than Walters does for the final 100 games or so.
Very interesting. Before we let you get out of here, in about a minute, now that OTAs and minicamp are in the rearview mirror, we hadn't talked to you since the conclusion of mandatory minicamp. What were your biggest takeaways?
Well, I was talking to Rick Scott, our consultant here, just a few moments ago, and he always frames things very well, and he said, it seems to me as an outsider like there's 50% hope and 50% fear, and I can see where the both come from. I can see where the fear comes from. I can certainly see where the hope comes from, because this coach is a fascinating case study. First year head coach, 60 years of age. He's doing afternoon practices. He's cutting out walkthroughs in training camp. I like the way he's run the off season program. It's all business. I like the way he talks. He's not verbose, but he's very much matter of fact. So I think that there's cause for hope right there. The problem is, boy, they've got to come out of the gate blazing, because they've got a 10-week stretch from week 5 to week 15 that is absolutely brutal. And I can't see them being favored more than 3 games over that 10-game stretch. So they almost have to go, 4-2, 5-1. First 4 games, last 2 games they should get, home against Detroit and Oakland. But those 10 games in the middle, boy, if they could win 4 or 5 out of those 10, they might be in the playoffs.
I, in part, referenced what you just said yesterday. I said, look at the first 4 games. There's not a game that strikes fear. Look at the rest of the schedule.
There's nothing but games that strike fear.
At Minnesota, at Indianapolis, at the Chargers.
Even at Buffalo, that time of year, that's not going to be a cakewalk.
No. It won't, and it hasn't been in Buffalo in recent years.
No, it hasn't been.
Sandy Clough, thanks for dropping by. We haven't done this in a while, so it's good to talk to you.
You got your 5 storylines?
I do have my 5 storylines. There they are. Already submitted.
I got my. Yeah.
You got your 5. Independent of his.
Of course. I'm not going to piggyback his.
He was standing outside the door when I gave
mine.
The last time I saw you, by the way, before I run, you were racing down the 15th fairway. No, you were on the cart path, so you were practicing safe and proper etiquette. But boy, were you going.
I was going. I was going. I was feeling it.
You play fast.
You know?
At least you drive fast. You may play slow, but you drive fast.
Sandy Clough, you can hear him every single night here weekdays on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. All right, it's that time of day. Stokely stoked up, and it's a specialty serving. We're getting hyped next.
What's Brandon Stokely?
Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Stoked up about today.
The women's national soccer team. They absolutely dominated Thailand 13-0. What a great way to start the World Cup, right, Zach? Some people are complaining that they ran the score up. Look, I've got no issue with how many goals they scored. It's the big leagues, and you're playing in the stinking World Cup. You don't take your foot off the throttle, but to see some of the celebrations, I thought was over the top. Look, I'm all for celebrating, but you're already embarrassing poor Thailand. Show some respect. I really didn't like, Rapino, that their captain. She scores the 9th goal to go up 9-0, and then she runs all over the place and then dives on the ground with one of the most ridiculous celebrations I've ever seen. Look, at least if you're going to be disrespectful while representing our country, at least make it a good celebration. In fact, that's what I'm stoked up about.
Brandon Stokely's
that was all.
That's what I'm talking about.
So, Oh, my goodness. At least make it a good Selly if you're going to Selly big.
Right. If you're going to do something and be disrespectful and you're up 9-0, game's over, you know, at least make it good. It was awful. I don't know what she was doing. It was just downright awful. And, you know, you're representing the United States of America. Okay, on the world's biggest stage, everybody is watching. People's perception of our country, of our people, they're looking at that game, and they're looking at how we acted in those situations, and they're going to look at her, and they're going to say, gosh, those people are disrespectful over there. You don't think that's right? I guarantee you people's perception of us and our country by what some of those players did was, that's what they think of us.
I think it probably reinforces what they already thought anyway.
Probably so. And I bet some people's opinions were formed because of what they saw.
Let me ask you this. So it's not that they ran up the score.
I don't feel it. Look, you got to play. Ball. Yeah, it's a big league. It's the World Cup. It's not youth soccer.
So you have no issue with that.
None. Okay. You're playing ball. They're big girls, right? And they're playing on the biggest stage, and you want to have your team ready to go and try to win it all. And so if you feel like you got to keep playing hard, which I have no problem with, you stay sharp, play hard, and it's the other team job to stop you,
right,
okay?
Right.
So no issue at all with 13. They could have scored 20. You just, it's the World Cup. It's not, you know, amateur, exhibition friendly match, any of that stuff.
And Alex Morgan said, I think it's disrespectful if we don't show up and give our best and play our game for 90 minutes. It's disrespectful to the Thai team if we don't. I believe they wanted us to play them straight up. So, and I agree with that sentiment. So you are among the crowd of like, look, run up the score, but don't celebrate the way that they did.
And I don't think they were running up the score. You're just playing soccer.
Yeah, whatever.
You're just playing soccer. Like in football, you know, you can control it a little bit more and just run the football. But, you know, if you're up, you're throwing the football. Just stop them. Look, no issue with them continuing to score goals. What are you not supposed to kick at the goal? You know, you're supposed to kick it backwards and go the wrong way and just kick it out of bounds. I mean, that's, Like Alex Morgan said, that's probably more disrespectful if you do that.
Just
play soccer. It's, you know, it's their responsibility to stop you.
What about just the joy of it? Like, what about, like, look, we're in the World Cup. We've been chomping at the bit here for years.
Have some joy.
And we're going to celebrate after we score. Now, goals 10, 11, or was it 10, 11, 12, 13? I don't think they did much of anything. Right. But it's still through the ninth goal, they were celebrating big. That's really what you have at
Yes. Okay. Exactly. It's just like, hey, just pick the ball. You know, they always run in the goal and pick the ball up. So just pick the ball up and bring it back to midfield and put it down. And just, you're already embarrassing them enough. I mean, I thought that was a little, you're the captain of that squad, right? It's the opening game of pool play. You're dominating this poor team. Okay. So I think at that point, you know, show some humility, show a little bit of respect for them, and you don't need to be running around the field and then, you know, doing this, whatever you were doing. I just thought that was way over the top. And especially on this stage, the biggest stage, when the world's watching, it's like, I could have done without that. A little bit too much.
I want to play devil's advocate with you. Because I didn't see the play, but I saw you comment about it on Twitter from the College World Series the other night.
Yes.
In a lopsided game. Yeah. I think it was 6-1.
Was it that much? At the time when he hit the home run, what was the score?
Yeah, at the time he hit the home run, it was 5-1.
5-1. Okay.
In the ninth, there's two men on. The kid hits it.
Right.
He does a bat flip. He's running around the bases. The first base umpire, almost like hopped in his way.
Right.
Like blocked him from going second. Like barking at him.
Right.
And you said, I love it. Look at that place. What an unbelievable atmosphere. The kid's showing some emotion. That's what sports is all about. He didn't hurt anybody. Tell the old first base umpire to stay out of the way and worry about getting his next safer out call, correct?
Right.
Isn't this along the same parallel, though?
I don't think so. Zach, this is a college kid playing in his last ever game in Mississippi State at Starksville. Have you ever seen that place? That place is flat out unbelievable.
It looked awesome.
You look at their field. He's playing his last ever game there. He just pretty much sealed the deal for his team to go to the College World Series. His final at bat in college. Okay, and he does that? No issue with that at all. They weren't running the score up. They weren't beating this team, you know, to where this game was already over. He sealed it with that hit. And he showed a little bit of emotion right there. that is fine. I have no problem with that. I just think in the moment that the United States were in, on that stage, we're not talking about a college kid playing his last ever game at his college and doing something like that in that environment. Okay, this is the World Cup. You're in the first game of pool play. You're beating a team 8-0. Game is over. It's been over. Okay? And then for you to kind of do that to me was over the top. It just was a little bit over the top, and you're representing our country. You know, you're the captain of that team representing our country. Okay? And so people's opinions are formed by watching that game, right or wrong or indifferent. But that's just the way it is. So I thought that some of them could have handled themselves better. And it is what it is. And I thought in that moment, you're already embarrassing them. And certainly, you know, there's no beef there. Like, look, if I was playing the Patriots and maybe we were beating them 40-0, I did something like, yeah, because I don't like them. Okay? But there's no beef. There's no previous history, no bad blood between Thailand and the United States. So just look, get the ball out of the goal, bring it back. This isn't your first ever goal. You're the captain of the team. So that's what I have a problem with. I don't have a problem with celebrating. I didn't have a problem with the Mississippi State guy doing it. But in his moment was different than the moment that I saw last night or yesterday from Rapinoe and how she acted. And is it the worst thing? No. Look, she was happy she scored a goal. I just thought that you saw Thailand. I mean, they were devastated. I mean, I just thought in that moment it could have been handled a little bit better. You're playing in the World Cup and you're flat out destroying this team. No need for that tacky celebration that was not even a good one to begin with.
Yeah, and in terms of the running up the score portion of it, I do want to add this ingredient that score differential in the World Cup matters.
What's the most though? What's the most?
What do you mean what's the most?
Is there a limit to it?
I don't believe so.
Is there a limit, Stephen? Do we know there's no limit? I don't know.
I honestly
either.
Don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
No, is there a limit on the most runs that you can have differential?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, like eight?
Is
maybe?
It eight? Okay. So, okay.
I don't know. I don't know if there was or not. And most of these things, there is a goal or in baseball, you know, you play in some of these baseball tournaments in the summer, kids baseball, there's a run. There's a, like, you can only have an 8-run differential. So it doesn't matter if you beat a team 20-0. It's only 8 is all you get, plus 8.
God, I wish I could read some of these responses on the Rumble Slot.
Are they coming after me?
No, they're just
do
like,
they want some?
Oh, if you think that's embarrassing our country, check out XYZ.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah, so like, yeah. I got you.
And both sides of it, by the way.
I love
both
it. Sides I love of it. It. I love it. But I'm just saying, and that's, you know, I understand, you know, some people say, who cares? But it is. And I just thought it, you know, look, you score a goal in soccer, look, celebrate. That's fine. But in this situation, I thought they should have been a little bit more respectful to Thailand, and you're already humiliating them. No need to do a tacky celebration.
Emmanuel Sanders is going to be back in studio today.
E-Dog!
At 5 o'clock. And it is going to be the second time in the last 6 months. The first time was as
epic.
It was the most tension-filled of a studio that I've ever been a part of, and it just so happened to be a week that you were gone. I was filling in with T-Mac, so there's like three of us in the studio, T-Mac, Emmanuel, me. It was an odd combination. It was one of the most entertaining hours of radio that I could ever remember. But he'll be back today at 5 o'clock. If he were here with us, what would you ask Emmanuel?
I'd ask him first, you know, obviously, how's Achilles doing? Do you expect to be practicing first day of training camp? Well, do you expect to have limitations on your practice schedule? And I would want to know that first and foremost, how the Achilles is doing and what the plan is for training camp. And I, you know, and maybe they don't know right now because you still have, I don't know, a month left. So, I mean, that's a long time in the rehab. I mean,
sure.
He looks good right now, but you still got a month to go. So a lot can change in a month. So maybe they don't really know. And they probably, once they get closer, probably I would say maybe the week before, they'll probably start getting their plans down. But I would ask him that anyway. And then I would ask him about this offense. Rich Scangarello, how do you think he's going to be as an offensive coordinator? He's never called a game before. He's never been an offensive, I mean, in the NFL. He's never been an offensive coordinator. Obviously learned under Kyle Shanahan. How do you think you'll fit in this offense? And how do you think Rich Scangarello will do in this offense? Another thing is Vic Fangio. You know, how is he as a head coach? Well, what would you ask him? Anything else?
I think those are good ones that I too would ask. Good ones.
Great ones.
Good questions there.
Solid.
I would ask him. I would ask him about life beyond this year and what he's looking for in the rest of his career.
That's a great one.
You know, when he was in studio here.
See, I give you credit when credit's due.
Yeah, it was fair.
Yeah,
I gave you fair credit too. It's good. when he was here during the season, on the day that he found out Demaryius Thomas was traded, and he was here doing a totally separate promotional event, and he jumped into the studio with then Mike Pritchard and Cecil Lammy, and they asked him, "Do you want to be a Bronco?" It wasn't, "Will you be a Bronco?" It was, "Do you want to be a Bronco beyond next season?" And he said, "We'll see." He said, "We'll see." At that time, I think we're all on the same page that he was like, "Look, yeah, I want to be a Bronco." Same way that Chris Harris wants to be a Bronco for the rest of his career.
Right.
But you better make it worth my while. Your price point has to be right near the top of the offers. In the immortal words of Chris Harris Jr., "I'll give them a shot," end quote. And that was the tone from Emmanuel, and I wonder what his tone is now that that sort of mindset has been stunted with the Achilles tear. He misses the last quarter of a season for the second consecutive year. And what are your goals here? You know, who do you see yourself being this year and beyond?
Yeah, I like that. And I think now in his situation, it is just, you know, I'm trying to get healthy. I'm trying to play this year, and I'll figure it out after that. I'm trying to, if I stay healthy, everything else will figure itself out. I think that's probably his answer there. But we'll see. You just never know. But obviously it's different now than it was then, right? Because then it wasn't, you know, he was healthy.
I believe Emmanuel Sanders would have held out had this not happened. And I would ask him that as well.
Sure.
That if you did have that 1,000-yard season that you were clearly on track for, was your plan to hold out a bit and try to get an extension and be a Bronco for life? You know, that's another interesting one. Here's another one that I would ask him. What is the main difference between working with Joe Flacco throughout OTAs and minicamp as opposed to working with any of the three, four quarterbacks that you've worked with in the last 3 years? Tell me something that sticks out. What is the main ingredient that sticks out?
Yeah, and it's different for him now because obviously he hasn't been practicing and participating in practice. And I would want to know also, like, you know, what's gone wrong here the last couple of years since Peyton Manning's has left? I mean, this is one guy that's been around since the greatness, right? Since the Super Bowl year and since those playoff runs and some really great offenses. What has gone wrong? And why is it different now? Why should Bronco country be optimistic about this year? Because every offseason the last couple of years, we've been told it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vance is going to be the guy. Trevor going into, you know, year two as the starter is going to be the guy. Case Keenum, man, he's going to be the guy. Now it's Flacco. Why is this year different than the last couple of years? Why should we be more optimistic this year?
Yeah, and I think that he would tell you, that because he sort of answered this question in a roundabout way with D-Mac, is Joe Flacco's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. That's sort of where it ends and starts. I think that'd be the way that he would answer it. And oddly enough, and I didn't think of this until I heard John Davis say it earlier today, that the opposites of Emmanuel Sanders' career are really incredible because he is a rare wide receiver that has played with three different Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, and now Joe Flacco. But he has also worked with three of the most lackluster quarterbacks that this league has offered in the last three seasons, Case Keenum, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, and even throw in Brock there in his second stint here. So it's been an interesting journey for Emmanuel.
Sure. He's been at the top and he's seen some lousy offenses and some bad quarterback play. So it's going to be entertaining. 5 o'clock. Looking forward to it.
Hey, how about this? What's the main difference from a Vic Fangio offseason to a Vance Joseph offseason?
Perfect. I like it. How do you expect things to be different in training camp? And then, you know, you dig into a little bit of Vance. You know, was he in over his head? Do you think he had the enough sway in that organization, you know, with John Elway, or was John calling the shots? I mean, you got to ask those questions. I think will he answer them honestly? Who knows? Who knows? But it's going to be interesting. Round two.
I think it will be a little bit more cordial this time around.
Sure.
The first 15 minutes of that initial conversation, when Emmanuel's 5 feet from D-Mac, like clapping his hands, like, yo, no. I'm like right here on your doorstep. That was
I would probably be the same way if I was him. You know, like, because you could tell, like, the promo that we have running. Like, how do you know? How do you know I'm
right.
not
a, How do you know I'm not
I'm
a
not
good
a good leader? You know, where's this coming from? So, like, I think, you know, if I'm hearing that stuff about me, I'd be the same way. Like, wait a second. What are you talking about? Like, where are you going with this? You know, I'd be upset, too. So, but it's good that they hashed it out. And we'll see what happens in the sequel.
The sequel. I like that. Speaking of the sequel, there's been about 18 sequels to Hard Knocks. The Raiders, it was announced yesterday, have it.
I love it. And I love it for a few different reasons, obviously.
Tell me.
We play them the first game of the season. So it's like we get an in-depth look at who the Raiders are, what they got going on.
Great point.
These guys, and you know what? We don't play them week 6 or week 8 where things change a lot from the beginning of the season. We play them week 1. That is a huge benefit for the Denver Broncos to get an up close and personal look at that team and what's going on. You can't tell me that the Broncos won't be like in tune to what is going on and watching that show every single week and trying to get some kind of information about the Oakland Raiders.
I'd say it's part of their responsibility now.
Oh yeah, and so that's a huge benefit for the Broncos to be able to kind of look behind the scenes at what the Raiders got going on. I mean, will it win them the game? No. But it's a piece of the pie. It's certainly not going to hurt Denver.
It got me thinking about Hard Knocks because you and your team was featured on the first ever episode of Hard Knocks, season 1, episode 1. I went and watched last night of the 2001 Baltimore Ravens, and I took notes on the episode. It's unbelievable. Like, we talk about the cast of characters with the Raiders. What about Brian Billick, Marvin Lewis, Rex Ryan, Jack Del Rio, all on the same staff, with the likes of Ray Lewis, Shannon Sharp, Tony Saragusa, Rod Woodson, Randall Cunningham. I mean, the cast of characters on that Ravens team was hilarious. And going through the episode, you know, one of my biggest takeaways was just how much the NFL has changed. Like, you guys used to stay in a Best Western.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. Rod Woodson is on episode 1 or the first half of 2, I forget, when he's like, you know, other teams, they have to stay in like college dorms and it's hot with no AC, not here in Baltimore. He goes, "We stay at the Best Western." He goes, "We got mini fridges in every room." He goes, "We got a phone line and we got cable and air conditioning." And he's like, he's so proud.
That's unbelievable.
He's like, "That's how we do it in Baltimore. They treat us the right way." And I'm like, "Holy crap. You're banging your chest about staying in the Best Western, and you're in the National Football League."
And that was 18 years ago? 17?
That's it? No, 18 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's unreal.
And I used to remember, like, going into the training room and, you know, the Gatorade bars.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, they're everywhere now. I mean, it's like everywhere. But, like, if you could sneak in the back and grab one, they weren't, like, out in the open and readily available. You know, I remember Kadri Ismail would go in the back and get some because he was a vet player. But I was scared to go in the back and try to get one of those things. That's the times, you know, back then in, you know, 2001, whenever it was, it's so different now. Now they got, you know, 5-course meals and it's unbelievable the difference in the NFL from, you know, when that show first started to where we are today. But it's like, I remember those times. Like, I was floored whenever they had the refrigerators full of Gatorade for you in the weight room. You know, drinks like right there ready for like Gatorades in the weight room. This is so awesome.
This is in the NFL.
Right.
Now you just snap your fingers and you tell someone from quality control you want something. You'll have a fridge full of Gatorade.
Right. Whatever you want.
So crazy. So crazy. And I didn't realize Quadra Ismail was such a sunglasses inside guy.
Oh, really?
He's like always wearing his sunglasses. He's like in the grocery store. He's got his sunglasses inside. But you said that was a guy that kind of took you under his wing a little bit earlier, right?
Really good guy. Yes. Helped me out and kind of showed me the ropes and. Really, really was there for me. But he's a good guy. But yeah, just kind of, you know, flashbacks to all those characters that you're talking about. Now you got me wanting to.
You've
got to
go back and watch
it. Go back and watch it.
But my favorite part in close, my favorite part is, was Brian Cox on that team? I forget who Shannon Sharpe was talking to.
No, not Brian Cox.
It was someone. Sam something.
Sam Gash, maybe.
Oh, it might have been Sam Gash. But Shannon Sharpe is saying that.
And Coates.
He was saying that kids have gotten so bad these days. He doesn't believe, he said they should get 2 days off for Christmas, 2 days off for Thanksgiving, and that's it. And they should, quote, get their ass whipped more, end quote. I mean, this was
Could you imagine somebody saying that now?
No, not really.
No.
Not really. If you want to watch it, it's free on YouTube. Check it out. It's hilarious to take a look back at those cast of characters that you were a part of. And you were featured in episode one, catching a pass on Rod Woodson.
I didn't drop it.
You did not get cursed out by Brian Billick, which was good. All right. Great fun today. Had a blast. And we got the drive coming up next.